morning and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you from the English service of the Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clote in Washington, D.C.
The cost of living has gone too high and people are struggling. The economy really has not performed at all. Again, with the COVID pandemic, it has made even things worse for a poor country, you know, like Malawi.
The Consumers Association of Malawi is expressing concern that the cost of living in the Southern African country is too high.
So these are, for example, legal measures, imposing lockdowns and stuff like that. They have done very well, but they haven't done good on the public relations side in order to educate people about the reason why people need to be vaccinated. And that state of affairs has been taken advantage of by anti-vax groups.
A Namibian human rights group calls on the government to step up its COVID-19 vaccination campaign to help combat hesitancy and conspiracy theories.
So, what are all these? If you are in court, why should you demonstrate? If really you are in court, are you demonstrating against a judge or you are demonstrating against your opponent? That is the indiscipline.
And a Ghanaian political pressure group says it opposes plans by the traditional council to reintroduce traditional warriors in society. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. The Consumers Association of Malawi is expressing concern that the cost of living in the Southern African country is too high. The group blames higher taxes, levies, and crushing government debt as major reasons why goods and services are expensive and out of reach for the poor. In a statement, the association also called on Malawians to reject what it says are politically motivated projects that are not properly financed or that are aimed to score political points. The remarks follow recent demonstrations with protesters calling on President Lazarus Chakwera and his ruling coalition, the Tonse Alliance, to keep their campaign promises. Critics say the president and his team appear to have made unrealistic and unachievable promises in the run-up to the general election. But supporters of the government say the president will keep his word. They are asking for more time to allow administration measures to jumpstart the economy and improve living standards. To learn more about the situation, I read John Capito, Executive Director of the Consumers Association of Malawi.
The cost of living has gone too high and people are struggling. The economy really has not performed at all. You know, again, with the COVID pandemic, it has made even things worse for a poor country, you know, like Malawi, a country that does not have access to international markets. And the cost of the local currency has really depreciated sharply, making it harder for Malawians. Now, coming back to the issue about the promises that the current administration made, most of them were made to a population that was desperate for change. And I think they took advantage of that hunger from the people to see change, where they made a number of unrealistic, unachievable promises that really were applauded by the general population.
Malawians are aware. Most politicians campaign in poetry and govern in prose because campaigning is sharply different from governance.
Yes. Unfortunately, that was not the message that was given here. And, you know, when they went into government, they behaved as if they are going to implement everything. And I don't think we should be saying that, yes, we promised, but I think we were cheating you. Some of the people in Malawi did not believe that the guys were deceiving, were being deceived. They believed and they took their messages as being honest. They trusted the guys and they gave them the vote. Now to be told that we were lying because we are just politicians, I think that will be a big blow to the current administration, to any other politician. Yes, we know that both the previous and the current never lied. We know they made promises. But you must understand that this is a country where people are, it's not easy to decipher a lie from the truth, because most of the people are illiterate. How do you begin now to come back and say, what I said to you was a lie? And you try and squeeze in and do something that is impossible. For example, right now we have the agriculture input program, you know, subsidy program, which offers farmers, or poor households, certain basics like fertilizer and seeds. This year it can't be done because we don't have money. Malawi is broke. It can't run such a program.
What are some of your members saying about the current situation in the health and education sector at the moment?
It's so pathetic. I'm saying that when you don't need even to be taught. Everybody is sick and tired about how our health and education sectors have gone down. There is nothing, there's no drug in our hospitals. There are no drugs. You can find even a simple medication like paracetamol. You can find it. People have got to wait for about 2 to 3 days without getting any medication. People are dying on the doors of hospitals because they can't get any medication. If you go there, you have to stay maybe for 3-4 days, walking back and to, in order just to get an aspirin. All these are the challenges. When you go to our education infrastructure, children are running under a tree. Today in 2022, today our children can't go into class because the class that they have is either too leaky, that when it is raining right now, they can't even stay in that class. They are grasses fast, and these are the things that I think most Malawians are getting sick of. These are the basic rights that everybody must have.
Now, Mr. Kapito, you are appealing to Malawians to reject politically motivated projects that you said are poorly planned with no resources. What do you mean by those?
You see, for example, right now, as I said earlier on, the government will want to do something, that maybe they can be trusted on. They are struggling to convince Malawians that we can do something better. But what we are saying is, what we are seeing is that to implement those programs, every consumer will be hurt. Every Malawian will be hurt because government will have to borrow at a higher cost. In order just to implement a political campaign promise, each one of them has got a negative result on the same consumer that they are going to, project is going to assist. So we are saying, yes, nothing is free. There's no way the government can say, now we are going to offer, to give you free social programs, free social services, without the consumer paying. And we are saying, as consumers, we are already chopped up with taxes.
John Kapito is the executive director of the Consumers Association of Malawi. He spoke with me from the capital, Lilongwe. In Namibia, a human rights group is calling on the government to step up its COVID-19 vaccination campaign to help combat hesitancy and conspiracy theories. Namibia Rights, or NAMRIGHTS, the country's largest human rights organization, says these two issues, which are affected by a lack of education, are contributing to low vaccination rates. The remarks come after President Haige Geingob called on private and public institutions to enforce vaccination requirements before allowing people access to their offices. The move, the president says, will help encourage citizens to get vaccinated and reduce the spread of the coronavirus. The president and the first lady were reported to have been infected last year, forcing the first couple to isolate. Phil Yat Nangolo is executive director of NAMRIGHTS. He tells me that intensifying recent government efforts, including vaccine mandates, can help curb the spread of the disease.
Partially, I'm one of those who are saying government hasn't really done enough to educate people about combating the virus. Although at the same time, right from the beginning, government has been taking measures. These are, for example, legal measures, imposing lockdowns and stuff that they have done very well. But they haven't done good on the public relations side in order to educate people about the reason why people need to be vaccinated. And that state of affairs has been taken advantage of by anti-vax groups, some of them who have very strong support from, among other countries, the United States of America.
I understand the president is calling on businesses to enforce some form of vaccine measures. If you are not vaccinated, they should not allow you into their establishment. Do you think his call is effective or could help push back on vaccine hesitancy in Namibia?
Indeed, it can. And by the way, as a matter of fact, governments all over the world are doing just that. If you listen to the news and watch television about measures being taken in countries like Italy, Austria, and many others are taking precisely those measures in order to boost vaccination programs. I think it is not a surprise that the Namibian president is doing that. So it is common practice all over the world.
So why are people still pushing back against the vaccines, especially when there's growing evidence that people are dying? Even the president and the first lady were reported to have contracted the disease at some point in time.
Yeah, precisely. I mean, vaccination hesitancy, it's not really what is going on in Namibia is not really homegrown, if you want. It is a thing that was imported from among other countries, the United States of America, during, for example, the regime of Donald Trump. So people are not only against vaccination, but they are really suspicious. They are against virtually each and everything the government here is doing. And that is dangerous. There have been calls for civil war. There have been there are insults on government officials, and death threats are being issued on social media. People are against, for example, the 5G network. They are against Chinese. So it's like a part of the war, trade war between. At the end of the day, it looks like it's part of the trade war between especially Donald Trump's government, or maybe even now the United States government, and China.
So what do you think is the way forward for the government to increase the vaccination rate among the people, especially with the prevailing conditions?
There are two things that need to be done, basically under the present circumstances. The first is, in fact, to continue doing what the government is doing now, even if that would take to impose lockdowns, and to increase vaccine mandates, to require passes, Italians, they call it super green passes or something like that. At the same time, government must really step up education for the people to really understand that it is really, really necessary that people get vaccinated, because that first saves lives of people from dying from this disease. Number two, it will help economic recovery.
Phil Yanangolo is Executive Director of NAMRIGHT. He spoke with me from the Namibian capital, Windhoek. In Ghana, the political pressure group, the United Kobo Foundation, says It opposes plans by the traditional council in the area to reintroduce traditional warriors in society. It says the plan undermines the work of the police, who leaders of the group say are mandated to ensure law and order. This after Nene Sakite II, paramount chief of the Manya-Krobo traditional area in Ghana's eastern region, announced that the traditional council has resolved to reintroduce the use of traditional warriors. The move, the paramount chief says, will help combat rising indiscipline in the area. Local media reports tension between the traditional council and members of the Krobo Foundation. It follows recent protests the group organized, which were approved by the police but without reportedly seeking permission from the traditional council. Leaders of the United Krobo Foundation say the reintroduction of traditional warriors appear to be a way for the traditional council to clamp down on the activities. Nene Asada Aho is the spokesperson for the Manya Krobo Traditional Council. He tells me that the United Krobo Foundation is an unrecognized group carrying out unapproved activities, which he says have been creating tension and social discord in the region.
This is what I'm saying, that there is an indiscipline, and the Tenzagate is concerned about.
Why do you think there's indiscipline in the area?
That is why I'm saying that this thing started from 2017, when we realized the electricity build-up were coming, were over and over. So they were making noise, and then the Kono was taking it upon himself, the traditional council group, invited the management of UCD. They came. He also invited the youth. Really, they have accepted that really they were overbilling from 2014 to 2017. When they checked, they said, okay, we're going to rectify the whole situation. There was a demonstration in 2019. This demonstration claimed the life of one of the innocent persons. So Kono said, what are all these? If you are in court, why should you demonstrate? If really you are in court, are you demonstrating against a judge, or you are demonstrating against your opponent? That is the indiscipline.
How does the traditional council and the paramount chief want to tackle this indiscipline in the area, particularly with what you are describing as efforts to defraud the people in the traditional area?
So he's telling the people as we speak now that they should stop paying because they are not in court with EPG.
When the IGP came on the invitation of the king, Nene Sakite II, what happened?
Yes.
And what is the next step forward to tackle this indiscipline that you are talking about?
Nene Sakite, I had spoken with the IGP. Some of the youth came there. We didn't know them, but some of them came there. He has spoken with them. That in fact, he talked a lot, telling them that they cannot take the law into their own hands. If anything, they have to pass through the proper channel, so and so, for their listening to the address and so on. So as we speak now, the next time of action by the traditional council is to sit down with some youth groups which are recognized. So he wants to sit down with them so that we see how best we can solve these ECG problems once and for all.
Is there a plan to meet with this United Krobo Foundation to address their concerns so they don't take the law into their own hands after the IGP met some of the youth groups in the traditional area? Is there any plan?
That is the problem. If they will come, because Kono invited them, number of occasions where they come, they say this and that. Tomorrow they do a different thing. So if they will come, there is. Because this is not the first time. He invited them. He invited them on number of occasions. When they come tomorrow, they do different things.
Nene Asada Aho is the spokesperson for the Manya Krobo Traditional Council. He spoke with me from Odumase in the Ghanaian Eastern Region. Meanwhile, in reaction to the statement by the Traditional Council, the General Secretary of the United Krobo Foundation, Joshua Evo, says his group works to defend citizens when traditional authorities are not able to ensure their constitutional right. He denies accusations that the group has been illegally collecting dues and defrauding young people. Mr. Evo tells me the leaders of the group are ready to meet officials of the traditional council to resolve their concerns.
The statement made by the Kono or the leadership of the traditional council is quite unfortunate.
Why is it unfortunate?
We believe a whole paramountcy wouldn't have gone to that extent of saying that leaving the state security, that is the police, and then he's going the traditional way. And we know traditional warriors are people who fight for that particular community in the olden days. And we know they kill. We no longer use those warriors, but rather the state protects the indigenous.
Joshua Ivo, there are suggestions that there are increasing rise of indiscipline in society, which threatens security in the Manya-Krobo traditional area. And that is why the traditional council decided to reintroduce the use of traditional warriors to help in the fight against indiscipline and to restore some form of security. Of course, working in coordination with the Ghanaian police. Why are you still against this?
If we hear the word indiscipline, then it is not true.
Why is it not true?
It is never true. The issue is the foundation was not introduced to the community around 2017, where we had problems with our electricity bills, water bills, and other issues, whereby the chiefs in the community failed to speak for the people. Therefore, we took it on ourselves that we are going to speak for ourselves. And that was the issue. It has gone to the point that if something is going wrong and you say it, then it means you don't respect the elders. We expect the elders to talk about these issues, and they fail to do so. So they are saying indiscipline, indiscipline. No one will go to that extent insulting the chief or anything.
Is this a case of your group feels you are being targeted or being suppressed? The recent demonstrations you had became very violent,
yeah,
and they were confrontational, and people got injured, and that is why the council had to act. It is within their mandate to act, you know.
Our recent demonstration was peaceful. We wrote to the police. We went for a permit. They came to guide us. Did our demonstration successful, and nothing came wrong. We presented our petitions to the ministry that supposed to get our petitions, and we did that. So what was wrong with our demonstration? The incident that happened some years back was quite different from this. And that one was just a rout. It wasn't a demonstration. If they are saying that we did something wrong, they should come out perfectly. They should come out and say it.
How are you going to resolve this tension between your organization and the traditional council? How are you going to resolve this stalemate or tension between the two groups?
That was what we were even expecting from the traditional council. Even if you are saying we've went wrong or we've gone wrong, the best thing is to call your people, ask them questions. Why are you doing this? Why are you doing this? Why are you doing this? But there was nothing like that sort. And then they come out to say just anything, to open their mouth, say anything that will just put damage to whatever we did. We will go according to law. We will go by law. Whatever we need to do, we have to consult our counsels, our lawyers, before we do it. So there's no way we'll go extra mile from the law. We can't do that. And we know if we do that, the state is going to hold us responsible. Therefore, we'll go according to law. We expect that the traditional council itself will call the youth groups, ask questions, and then we bring our grievances. Could you remember I wrote to the Kono that we want to do something, and therefore we need his guidance. This man refused to even call us. And we went on the ground, hit the ground, did our demonstration, we delivered our petitions.
Joshua Evo is the General Secretary of the United Krobo Foundation. He spoke with me from Odumase in the Ghanaian Eastern Region. In Uganda, a number of schools have set up safe spaces where young mothers can breastfeed their children and pregnant learners can rest. The areas are also expected to house babysitters who will mind the children as their mothers attend class. For VOA, Catherine Nambi reports from the Ugandan capital, Kampala.
A young woman calling herself Sarah is a teenage mother of a 4-month-old baby and cannot hide her joy following her parents' decision to send her back to school. She told VOA that with the harassment she faced as a teenage mother, she had lost hope of ever returning to her studies.
Good enough that was then given me. Now, that said that a last chance. Yes, they told me that you have to go back to school no matter what. I felt good. I don't even have to say it. Something so good for me.
Sarah's father, Okello Albert, explains his decision to send his daughter back to school.
I sat down with my wife. I told her that, please, this is our child, the firstborn, and we need to get her back to school. We missed the studies, and we feel the pain, how we missed it. So similarly, I was like, let this one not miss studies like as we did. So that is the reason as why we took her to school, so that she can do better. We have seen girls who got pregnant, and when they get back to school, they really work very hard.
Sarah is just one of thousands of young girls who have gotten pregnant during the time schools in Uganda have been closed to stem the spread of COVID-19. It has now been 1 week since schools were reopened after being closed for 2 years. Uganda's Minister of Education is encouraging schools to allow pregnant and breastfeeding students to return to classrooms. Some schools have set up special facilities to help them continue with their studies. Joseph Echegem is a deputy head teacher in one of the schools in Uganda's Soroti district.
Those who can manage to breastfeed the children within the school compound, we have gazetted a place for breastfeeding and where they stay with their babysitters. And then if at all someone wants to run home, because maybe someone could be shy, failing one, we have also allowed, given permission. Interestingly is that these children are very happy. They're even enjoying classes with their colleagues. They don't find any challenge.
Some schools have embarked on counseling and offering psychosocial guidance for both students and teachers to ensure a conducive learning environment. Joyce Laka is a psychologist and counselor. She cites a need to train teachers on how best to handle this category of learners.
The pupils and then the students, where these children or these teenagers are going to join, so that they avoid name calling. Another preparing the teachers themselves psychologically, that the teachers are able to provide even the minimal social support to these teenage girls who are coming when they're expecting or they're coming with babies. I think it's very important for the school teachers to work hand in hand with the families of these girls so that we provide safe environment for them to be able to achieve.
However, there are calls from some people, including religious leaders, for the government to review the policy on returning pregnant and breastfeeding girls to school. The Interreligious Council of Uganda says the move was rushed. Stephen Kazimba is the Archbishop of the Church of Uganda. He says many schools aren't prepared to provide the much-needed care for pregnant learners.
The anticipated psychosocial support that these girls need is not available to them in most communities. The schools are not equipped to take care of health challenges that may emerge in the first 3 months of the pregnancy, and yet we have this commitment to reduce maternal mortality. We are of the view that realistic options need to be explored. There is a shared dilemma.
Edson Subuga is a senior advisor with the non-government organization Save the Children. He advises the public to refrain from condemning pregnant and breastfeeding learners.
Some sections of society feels that it is immoral or it is not right for a child who is pregnant or was given birth to go back to school. Yes, from a morality perspective, that is correct, but from the human rights perspective, this child still has a right, and education is the way which is going to open their chances for life. And blocking them outside is not only immoral, is also very, very bad, because most of these children have gotten pregnant because of conditions beyond their own making.
Statistics from United Nations Population Fund indicate that over 332,000 teenage pregnancies were registered in Uganda since March 2020 when schools were closed by government. Analysts warn that if no measures are put in place to support pregnant and breastfeeding students, about 10,000 may never go back to school. This is Catherine Nambi for VOA News in Kampala.
is the Voice of America, and you are listening to Nightline Africa. I'm your host, Peter Clotter, in Washington. Coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa, and music from African Collection. But first, the World Food Programme warns Ethiopia is on the edge of a humanitarian disaster as escalating fighting in the north is preventing the delivery of needed food from reaching millions of people in battle-scarred Tigray province. For VOA, Lisa Schlein has more from Geneva.
The last time a food convoy was able to reach Tigray's capital, Mekele, was mid-December. Millions of acutely hungry people in this war-torn province have been deprived of food since then. In a blunt warning to the warring parties and international community, World Food Programme spokesman Thompson Feary says his agency's humanitarian operation in northern Ethiopia is about to grind to a halt. He says intense fighting in the region is blocking the passage of fuel and food.
Stocks of nutritionally fortified food for the treatment of malnourished children and women are now exhausted, and the last of WFP cereals, pulses, and oil will be distributed this week. Because of fighting, food distributions are at an all-time low. WFP aid workers on the ground tell me that warehouses are completely empty.
Fighting erupted between Ethiopian government troops and Tigrayan forces in November 2020. Conditions have seriously deteriorated since then. The World Food Programme says 9.4 million people in northern Ethiopia now require humanitarian food aid, an increase of 2.7 million from just 4 months ago. In Tigray alone, the United Nations says 5.2 million people depend on international assistance to survive. It says 400,000 people are living in famine-like conditions, and another 2 million are on the verge of famine. The WFP aims to provide food aid for 2.1 million people in Tigray and for an additional 1.1 million people in the Amhara and Afar regions. However, money is in short supply. The UN Food Agency is urgently appealing for $337 million to carry out its emergency food assistance program in northern Ethiopia over the next 6 months. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
It's now time for Nightline Africa Sports, and for that, let's join Douglas Mpuga. Hello, Douglas.
Hi, Peter, and good evening, sports fans. Welcome to Nightline Africa Sports. At the Africa Cup of Nations in Cameroon, Mohamed Salah scored the only goal against Guinea-Bissau to kickstart Egypt's Africa Cup of Nations campaign. A stunning late equalizer by Guinea-Bissau was ruled out after a video assistant referee review. Record seven-time winners Egypt lost their Group D opener 1-0 against Nigeria. But on Saturday, Salah volleyed in with 20 minutes left to secure a crucial victory in Goroma. Meanwhile, Nigeria cruised to a 3-1 victory over Sudan and booked their spot in the last 16. The Super Eagles, who are chasing a fourth Nations Cup triumph, know they will face a third-placed side in the last 16 if they can top Group D, and they round off their group against Guinea-Bissau on Wednesday. In Group B, Gabadino Mahango scored twice as Malawi beat Zimbabwe 2-1 to boost their hopes of a first-ever appearance in the last 16. Malawi sit a point behind Guinea and Senegal, who both have 4 points. The victory is only Malawi's second win at the Nations Cup, with their first, a 3-0 victory over Algeria, coming during their tournament debut in 2010. Senegal and Guinea moved closer to reaching the last 16 following a goalless draw. Morocco also advanced to the last 16 with a 2-0 victory over Comoros in Group C. They have maximum points from their opening two games. Comoros' final chance in Cameroon is on Tuesday against Ghana. Morocco take on Gabon in Yaoundé on the same day. And Gabon scored a controversial late goal against Ghana to draw 1-1 in Group C. The result put Gabon on the verge of the last 16. And in tennis, Novak Djokovic is challenging the Australian government's decision to revoke his visa in the Australian Federal Court. The world's number one men's tennis player faces deportation and a 3-year ban on obtaining a new visa. The Australian Immigration Minister decided Friday to cancel the unvaccinated player's visa. Nine-time Australian Open winner Djokovic is scheduled to play in the tournament on Monday night. The Serbian had his visa first revoked on January 6th amid questions over vaccine exemption he had received. And that's it for this edition of Netland Africa Sports. Back to you, Peter.
Thanks a lot, Douglas. It's always a pleasure to hear from you. We'll link up with you again next Sunday for another look at African sports. Nightline Africa Sports. It's Sunday on Nightline Africa, and this is the time we get to relax and reflect. A flashback with music from the continent.
Ballon d'or, tu m'as pour l'heure. Cajou, c'est ma folle au casting. bari ninge ye sokina zaraki façon.
That was our Sunday music spot. Hope you enjoy the music from Nightline Africa here at the English service of the Voice of America in Washington. Nightline Africa comes to you from the English service of the Voice of America. Hope you enjoy the program tonight. As you know by now, we are on air on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC. From the Nightline Africa team, Managing Editor William Eagle and Producer Douglas Mpuga, we say thanks for joining us. And remember, as the elders say, however black a cow is, the milk is always white. I'm your host, Peter Clotet in Washington. Good evening, Africa.